理课堂听 class.com。
Unit 4. Preview. What's wrong with the students of today? Back when I was a student, we had a better attitude. Criticisms like this are often heard from parents and teachers, in the newspapers and other media, and it's been that way ever since education began. No matter what society or era you consider, there are always plenty of wise authorities pointing out that the students of today are somehow failing to grasp the true meaning of university education. Or maybe it's the other way around. Are universities failing to grasp the true meaning of students? The texts in this unit examine different aspects of this question. Text A discusses the many pressures that modern students face, while texts B and C take a harder look at some basic misunderstandings about education and what a university is for. Text A, College Pressures, by William Zinser. I am master of Brantford College at Yale. I live on the campus and know the students well. We have 485 of them. I listen to their hopes and fears, and also to their stereo music and their piercing cries in the dead of night. Does anybody care? They come to me to ask how to get through the rest of their lives. Mainly, I try to remind them that the road ahead is a long one, and that it will have more unexpected turns than they think. There will be plenty of time to change jobs, change careers, change whole attitudes and approaches. They don't want to hear such news. They want a map, right now, that they can follow directly to career security, financial security, social security, and presumably, a prepaid grave. What I wish for all students is some release from the grim grip of the future. I wish them a chance to enjoy each segment of their education as an experience in itself, and not as a tiresome requirement in preparation for the next step. I wish them the right to experiment, to trip and fall, to learn that defeat is as educational as victory, and is not the end of the world. My wish, of course, is naive. One of the few rights that America does not proclaim is the right to fail. Achievement is the national god, worshipped in our media, the million-dollar athlete, the wealthy executive, and glorified in our praise of possessions. In the presence of such a potent state religion, the young are growing up old. I see four kinds of pressure working on college students today: economic pressure, parental pressure, peer pressure, and self-induced pressure. It's easy to look around for bad guys, to blame the colleges for charging too much money, the professors from assigning too much work, the parents for pushing their children too far, the students for driving themselves too hard. But there are no bad guys, only victims. Today, it is not unusual for a student, even one who works part-time at college and full-time during the summer, to have accumulated $5,000 in loans after 4 years. Loans that the student must start to repay within 1 year after graduation. And incidentally, not all these loans are low interest, as many non-students believe. Encouraged at the commencement ceremony to go forth into the world, students are already behind as they go forth. How can they not feel under pressure throughout college to prepare for this day of reckoning? Women at Yale are under even more pressure than men to justify their expensive educations to themselves, their parents, and society. For although they leave college superbly equipped to bring fresh leadership to traditionally male jobs, society hasn't yet caught up with this fact. Along with economic pressure goes parental pressure. Inevitably, the two are deeply intertwined. I see students taking pre-medical courses with joyless determination. They go off to their labs as if they were going to the dentist. It saddens me, because I know them in other corners of their life as cheerful people. "Do you want to go to medical school?" I ask them. "I guess so," they say, without conviction, or, "Not really." "Then why are you going?" "My parents want me to be a doctor. They're paying all this money, and..." Peer pressure and self-induced pressure are also intertwined, and they begin from the very start of freshman year. I had a freshman student, I'll call Linda, one instructor told me, who came in and said she was under terrible pressure because her roommate, Barbara, was much brighter and studied all the time. I couldn't tell her that Barbara had come in 2 hours earlier to say the same thing about Linda. The story is almost funny, except that it's not. It's a symptom of all the pressures put together. When every student thinks every other student is working harder and doing better, the only solution is to study harder still. I see students going off to the library every night after dinner and coming back when it closes at midnight. I wish they could sometimes forget about their peers and go to a movie. I hear the rattling of typewriters in the hours before dawn. I see the tension in their eyes when exams are approaching and papers are due. Will I get everything done? Probably they won't. They will get sick. They will sleep. They will oversleep. They will bug out. I've painted too grim a portrait of today's students, making them seem too solemn. That's only half of their story. The other half is that these students are nice people and easy to like. They're quick to laugh and to offer friendship. They're more considerate of one another than any student generation I've ever known. If I've described them primarily as driven creatures who largely ignore the joyful side of life, it's because that's where the problem is, not only at Yale, but throughout American education. It's why I think we should all be worried about the values that are nurturing a generation so fearful of risk and so goal-obsessed at such an early age. I tell students that there is no one right way to get ahead, that each of them is a different person, starting from a different point and bound for a different destination. I tell them that change is healthy and that people don't have to fit into prearranged slots. One of my ways of telling them is to invite men and women who have achieved success outside the academic world to come and talk informally with my students during the year. I invite heads of companies, editors of magazines, politicians, Broadway producers, artists, writers, economists, photographers, scientists, historians, a mixed bag of achievers. I ask them to say a few words about how they got started. The students always assume that they started in their present profession and knew all along that it was what they wanted to do. But in fact, most of them got where they are by a circuitous route after many side trips. The students are startled. They can hardly conceive of a career that was not pre-planned. They can hardly imagine allowing the hand of God or chance to lead them down some unforeseen trail.
New words. Campus.
Piercing.
Pierce.
Presumably.
Presume.
Grave.
Gravity.
Grip.
Segment.
Preparation.
Wealthy.
Glorify.
Glory.
Potent.
Self-induced.
Induce.
Incidentally.
Commencement.
Commence.
Ceremony.
Commencement ceremony.
Reckoning.
Reckon.
Day of reckoning.
Equip.
Inevitably.
Inevitable.
Intertwined.
Pre-medical.
Dentist.
Cheerful.
Conviction.
Roommate.
Typewriter.
Bug.
Considerate.
Fearful.
Goal obsessed.
Pre-arranged.
Arrange.
Slot.
Informally.
Economist.
A mixed bag.
Circuitous.
Circuit.
Circular.
Trail.
Text B. College Lectures. Is Anybody Listening? By David Daniels. A former teacher of mine, Robert A. Folks of New York University, likes to tell the story of a class he took in Old English while studying in Germany during the 1930s. On the first day, the professor strode up to the blackboard, looked through his notes, coughed, and began, "Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren." "Good day, ladies and gentlemen." Folks glanced around uneasily. He was the only student in the course. Towards the middle of the semester, Folks fell ill and missed a class. When he returned, to Folks's astonishment, the professor began to deliver not the next lecture in the sequence, but the one after. Had he, in fact, lectured to an empty hall in the absence of his solitary student? Folks thought it perfectly possible. Today, American colleges and universities, originally modeled on German ones, are under strong attack. Teachers, it is charged, are not doing a good job of teaching, and students are not doing a good job of learning. American businesses and industries suffer from uncreative executives, educated not to think for themselves, but to recite obsolete ideas that the rest of the world has long discarded. College graduates lack both basic skills and general culture. Studies are conducted and reports are issued on the status of higher education, but any changes that result either are largely cosmetic or make a bad situation worse. One aspect of American education too seldom challenged is the lecture system. Professors continue to lecture and students to take notes much as they did in the 13th century, when books were so scarce and expensive that few students could own them. The time is long overdue for us to abandon the lecture system and turn to methods that really work. One problem with lectures is that listening intelligently is hard work. Reading the same material in a textbook is a more efficient way to learn, because students can proceed as slowly as they need to until the subject matter becomes clear to them. Even simply paying attention is very difficult. People can listen at a rate of 400 to 600 words a minute, while the most spirited professor talks at scarcely a third of that speed. This time lag between speech and comprehension leads to daydreaming. Many students believe years of watching television have shortened their attention span, but their real problem is that listening attentively is much harder than they think. Worse still, attending lectures is passive learning, at least for inexperienced listeners. Active learning, in which students write essays or perform experiments and then have their work evaluated by an instructor, is far more beneficial for those who have not yet fully learned how to learn. While it's true that techniques of active listening, such as trying to anticipate the speaker's next point or taking intelligent notes, can enhance the value of a lecture, few students possess such skills at the beginning of their college careers. More commonly, students try to write everything down and even bring tape recorders to class in a clumsy effort to capture every word. Students need to question their professors and to have their ideas taken seriously. Only then will they develop the analytical skills required to think intelligently and creatively. Most students learn best by engaging in frequent and even heated debate, not by taking down a professor's often unsatisfactory summary of complicated issues. They need small discussion classes that demand a joint effort of teacher and students, rather than classes in which one person, however learned, expresses his or her own ideas. The lecture system ultimately harms professors as well. It reduces feedback to a minimum, so that the lecturer can neither judge how well students understand the material, nor benefit from their questions or comments. Questions that require the speaker to clarify obscure points and comments that challenge inadequately constructed arguments are indispensable to scholarship. Without them, the liveliest mind becomes dull. Undergraduates may not be able to make good contributions very often, but by lecturing alone, a professor fails to attract the beginner's naive question that could have triggered a fruitful line of thought. If lectures make so little sense, why have they been allowed to continue? Administrators love them, of course. They can cram far more students into a lecture hall than into a discussion class, and for many administrators, that's almost the end of the story. But the truth is that faculty members, and even students, conspire with them to keep the lecture system alive and well. Lectures are easier on everyone than debates. Professors can pretend to teach by lecturing, just as students can pretend to learn by attending lectures, with no one the wiser, including the participants. Moreover, if lectures give some students an opportunity to sit back and let the professor run the show, they offer some professors an irresistible forum for showing off. In a classroom where everyone contributes, students are less able to hide, and professors have less room to show off how smart they are. Lectures will never entirely disappear from the university scene, both because they seem to be economically necessary and because they spring from a long tradition in a setting that rightly values tradition for its own sake. But the lectures too frequently come at the wrong end of the students' educational careers, during the first 2 years, when they most need close, even individual instruction. If lecture classes were restricted to junior and senior undergraduates and to graduate students, who are more academically independent and more capable of working on their own, they would be far less destructive of students' interests and enthusiasms than the present system. After all, students must learn to listen before they can listen to learn.
New words. Former.
Stride.
Sequence.
Solitary.
Originally.
Discard.
Cosmetic.
Overdue.
Scarcely.
Lag.
Comprehension.
Comprehensive.
Passive.
Enhance.
Capture.
Captive.
Analytic.
Unsatisfactory.
Satisfactory.
Summary.
Feedback.
Obscure.
Fruitful.
Cram.
Conspire.
Participant.
Forum.